You have questions, we have answers. This is Jane Miller.
And this is Ken Miller. Welcome to our show all about real estate with Ken and Jane. Today, Jane, the topic is going to be Commercial Leases 101.
Wow, that's your expertise. Right, you know, last time I learned the commercial.
So get out your where's your notebook and your writing, right?
The collected dust, Ken. When I was a brand new agent 15 years ago, went through the training, commercial training.
Did anything stick in their head, it'll come back to you as we go through it, right?
We'll see.
I hope to not make this a lecture. We'll be able to have a little bit of a dialogue, and
it's going to be
very monotonous, and I'm not, you know, have to. So we make it a little bit less. But this is just to give the listeners an idea. If you're a landlord out there or a tenant of commercial space, if you're considering looking at commercial space, this is going to give you some tidbits of information about a very general overview of what commercial leases entail, you know, from the terminology to the types of leases to the negotiation process, and then, you know, some of the elements of a lease if we have time permitted. So first of all, when we're talking about commercial property, what are we talking about? We're talking about industrial type properties fall under it, which are warehouses, manufacturing facilities, retail spaces, you know, strip malls, regional malls, any, you know, standing retail stores, offices, anything that's all commercial, as well as multifamily units, 4 units or more, fall under the commercial realm. All right. So that gives you something. Now, the types of leases. With commercial, there's different types of leases available. The simplest one is called the gross lease. And you want to know what the gross lease would entail?
I don't want to confuse people.
The gross lease is an all-inclusive number lease. It's very similar to residential lease where the tenant pays $3,000 per month, and that's the rent. And then the lease specifies the increases, maybe after each year it goes up, whatever. But that's one number. That's all they pay, and they may pay the utilities on top of that if there's a separate meter. But it's a flat number. There's no variation on it. Okay, that's
a good point you brought up, Ken. Yeah. Is if they don't have a separate meters,
right?
Because if they do have a separate meters, and then they have to pay their own utility,
right?
But if they don't, the gross lease including
everything, right?
Just like a residential, they including everything. Yeah,
correct.
If you can't
but not
have
even
separate
a residential
meters.
Lease doesn't even include.
If you don't have your separate meter,
if you don't have your separate.
Yeah,
rent.
that's the whole point. Yeah,
right,
if you don't have separate meter, you can't charge the tenant.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the next type we have is a modified gross lease. That's where the tenant, there may be some charge that the landlord passes on to the tenant. It could be the custodial charge, the maintenance charge. It could be part of the taxes or part of the. It's just there could be certain elements of the maintenance or the taxes for the building. It's a mix. It's a hybrid between that and the other lease we're going to cover, which is a triple net lease. So that's any questions on the modified gross?
No,
so
modified, just negotiable.
Yeah, it's negotiable. Might mean that the rent is going to be $2,000 a month fixed base rent, and then let's say as an example, let's say the landlord's, it's a two-story building, it's 2,000 square feet, you rent the ground floor, 1,000 square feet, the landlord might say, okay, I'm going to charge you $2,000 a month, but in addition, you occupy half the building, so I'm going to charge half the taxes to you,
yes.
But I'm not going to charge you for the maintenance of the common area maintenance, mm-hmm. nor am I going to charge you the building insurance.
Yes.
That's an example of modified gross where you're paying a fixed rate base rent plus something else in addition to it. That's going to vary based on the actual bills coming in.
Yes.
The third type, and very common in the retail, very, very common in retail and in industrial, is called the triple net lease. This is a lease where the tenant is paying a base rent that's, you know, negotiable, but in addition to the base rent, they're reimbursing the landlord for the three N's, which are the N for the property taxes, the building insurance, and the third N is the CAM, common area maintenance. So it would be, and it's based on the pro rata share of how much they occupy. If you're leasing a warehouse, let's say it's 40,000 square foot warehouse, the industrial tenant's leasing 10,000 square feet. Under the typical warehouse lease, they're going to pay 25% because 10,000 over 40, they're going to pay is a quarter of the property taxes, the building insurance, and then the common area maintenance, which could be the snow removal, the landscaping, the shared exterior lighting, all that goes under the CAM.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And normally what happens is in the lease, it's worked in so that the base rent plus what the estimate is for the triple net is factored in, so that you derive a monthly figure that includes both components. And then at the year end or the following spring, they look at the actual charges for the property taxes, the building insurance, and the common area maintenance for the prior year, and they can adjust the triple net amount upwards or downwards.
Yes. For example, you have a bad snow winter,
right?
And then even though once they get the updated number, they can charge back the tenant for the difference because, yeah.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
So, and also in triple net lease, Ken, it's including improvement too. Because once I heard my clients, the landlord want to paint the exterior of all the buildings, and they charge the tenant.
It could be. Yeah. Normally it should be a maintenance, certainly, yeah, right? The painting, or yes, actually, yeah, that's actually true. There are cases where for malls or for even warehouses where the landlord has the common areas have to be repaved or relined. That's all passed on to the tenant.
Yeah.
That's a common area maintenance cost. Absolutely.
That tenant really have not much rights because even though the tenant may think the exterior look fine. I'm not saying beautiful, but it's fine.
Right.
But the landlord decided to make it much nicer protect.
You were in the business. We previously had the wood farm business. You had a warehouse with the 10,000 square feet, and we had base rent and triple net. And you paid for, under triple net, the basic thing to remember is you pay for you pay for all the ends and you pay for everything.
Yeah. If your air condition broke, the summer is hot, sometimes.
That's something else I'm going to cover that down the lease. Where that's something that gets into the negotiations we're going to cover. But that's something that's very important when you get to the stage of negotiating a lease. Those are like the gray areas when you have a HVAC system.
Roof.
The roof is something that the landlord would cover, but they charge you. They charge you back for the roof maintenance fee, for the inspections. And for the recoding, they charge you for it. But if the roof leaks, you call the landlord typically, and they would address it. But then it's allocated.
They
charge you.
You can call them, but they charge you.
Right. But we're going to cover the HVAC system a little bit later because that's always a negotiable point.
Okay.
And it's something that the tenants have to be aware of. So moving on with the leases, another type of lease, Jane, is a percentage lease, which actually is still in existence today. A percentage lease can be a triple net lease, which applicable to retail. But in addition to that, there can be a clause in the percentage lease that states if the tenant reaches a certain gross sales amount of, let's say, for as an example, $800,000, then the landlord wants a percentage of the additional revenue that exceeds the break point.
Yes.
So let's say the percentage lease had the provision that if the tenant is a coffee shop and they have gross revenue exceeding $800,000, the landlord wants 2% of the revenue exceeding $800,000. So let's say the gross revenue in that year is $1 million, they would get 2% of the
$200,000
as an example, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which should be, I think, $4,000 if my math is right.
Mm-hmm. Well, your math's always much better than mine, that's for sure.
Yeah, because 2% of 100 is 2,000, so double would be, I think.
You're always better than me.
That's right, yeah. So that's something that, is not as common, but I've experienced it in a previous deal that was done recently, where a percentage lease is one particular shopping center.
Yeah.
And it implements that. And according to the research, the due diligence we did in representing the tenant, there was no way that was a non-negotiable thing. And that was a practice the landlord wasn't budging on for all the tenants in there because they could. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So moving on. So another lease, which is very common for like the Starbucks and for the Wawa's, is something that's called a ground lease. You ever heard that term before?
Yes.
Yeah. So ground leases are typically arranged for a really, really long period of time, from like 50 to 99 years. And it's a case, it's a situation where the tenant goes in and they lease the ground, they lease the land, and then it could be known as a land lease. And then what they do in exchange is they make their own capital improvement. They build, like the Wawa might come in and do a ground lease, and they'll construct the facility, and then they'll pay rent to the the landlord for the lease rights, mm-hmm. and but they own the capital improvement for this for the extent of time that the lease is in place, and they normally pay the taxes, the improvements, the financing of the building, but it's all covered, you know. But it's that's, and the reason one of the what do you think one of the advantages for why a tenant might want to do a ground lease.
Because I think like a Starbucks or Wawa, they have their own unique design.
Correct.
They want to be in control of how the layout looks.
Right.
Like,
well, that's true. That's true. But also a lot of it's advantageous because they don't need to tie up the money in buying the land. So they can devote the extent of their monetary value can go towards the capital improvement.
Yes.
That's one of the advantages of the ground lease for the tenant's perspective, and an advantage from the landlord's perspective is that the ground lease they're not subject to any capital gain because they retain ownership of the land, but they are subject to the rent income, which is taxed as ordinary income. So there's always pluses and minuses, mm-hmm. and a disadvantage for the tenant in the ground lease is that they have less control, and they have to wait for the landlord's approvals for the building mm-hmm. design, and so the process could take longer for them to construct the building.
Mm-hmm. And also, I guess you see if they have a 50 years or something, if it's up, and then the building belongs to the landlord.
That's right. And at the end of the lease, that's a very good point, Jane.
Yeah.
That's a very tricky thing. At the end of the lease, again, it's in a lifetime and a half, or it could be a 99 year lease, which is typically done.
Well,
but at the end of the lease, if it's not further renewed, then the capital, everything on the property, including the capital improvement, reverts back to the landlord unless otherwise specified.
Yes. Yes.
All right. So why don't we take a short break, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Location, location, location. Yes, that's right. A three-level building located directly on Route 18 in East Brunswick is for sale. A great opportunity to present your business and brand to more than 50,000 passing vehicles. Zoned highway commercial, this building is suitable for retail, service, and professional uses. To find out more, please contact Ken at 908-337-9448. Prime office space on Route 18 is available for lease. This versatile layout features private offices, conference rooms, and workstations, with options to lease from 500 square feet to 2,800 square feet. Ideal for lawyers, accountants, and any professional service provider. Convenience extends beyond the premises with quick and direct access to major highways, including the New Jersey Turnpike, Route 1 and Route 130. To find out more, contact Ken at 908-337-9448.
You've got the questions. They've got the answers. It's All About Real Estate with Ken and Jane Muller. Now let's get back out to our hosts, Ken and Jane.
Okay, welcome back to our show. So we've covered some of the commercial 101 terminology, the different types of commercial properties, the different types of commercial leases that the landlord and tenant can encounter. And now we're going to put on our hats, and we're going to do finding a suitable space for your tenant. So for this topic, we're going to focus on a retail space. And let's say we're looking for somebody, who's wants to open up a coffee shop. They want a 1,200 square foot space. As a commercial agent, as any good agent, you have to do your homework. If a tenant comes to you and says they want to be in a certain geographic area, there's a lot of things to consider. Number one, the location of the units that you're searching for them. You have to look at the demographics. You have to consider the competition and in the surrounding area, the visibility of the space, the traffic flow, and that's
income.
The income, right? Well, the demographics is the age, the population, mm-hmm. the trend in population, and you really have to. So there's a whole analysis that should go before you start. If you do your search and you just start looking for your client says they want like 1,200 square feet retail, they want to be in Central Jersey, Middlesex County, find me a space in a strip mall. You have to go about it from the macro perspective and try to see. And obviously, if you're in a strip mall, you'd likely be the only tenant because strip malls don't allow overlapping competition for the most part.
Especially when you have a Dunkin' Donut or Starbucks.
And they can have a broader exclusion.
Yeah, forget it. Yeah.
Right. But it's so important that you do your homework from the external levels. And even I even like to do site previews, because sometimes even from the mapping and stuff, you have to drive around, because if you're looking for a client that wants to open a coffee shop and then you find out that there's maybe a Dunkin' Donuts right next to the strip mall and maybe a Starbucks across
maybe
the street.
Maybe across the street.
So, yeah. You know, you have to, and that you don't want to waste your client's time in going to a site and then finding out that it's a nut. So it's very important for whatever, however you do it, from your research or your, drive-bys, and you want to look at least a mile, 2 miles, and try to find out what's the competition. And if there is competition, that can be okay, because maybe
it's
a popular item.
Yeah.
But you have to make sure that there's it's not saturated with too many of the same competitors,
Yes.
It could be a different, it could be, I was helping one time a client that was looking for a dental space, and we found out that there's more dentists, I think, in East Brunswick than I ever dreamed possible, and
yes.
Yet they all seem to be making a living. But you need to share that information with your clients so they can help them make an informed decision.
Yes, absolutely.
So finding the locations that are suitable, and then you want to look at the health. If you're looking at a retail space, the likelihood is it might be an existing strip mall. You want to look at the health of the mall. Does it seem to be a thriving mall? Does it seem to be a dead mall? How much vacancy is there? What's the traffic flow coming into that particular mall? What's the condition of the facade? What's the appearance?
Yes.
What are they? Before you get into the specifics of the layout inside, those are all external factors that you have to be familiar with and knowledgeable on.
In a nutshell, you have to really interview your agent, find a good one. I agree with you 100%, Ken. You and I both hardworking agent, even though I do residential, you do commercial. I mean, when I was new agent 15 years ago, I pretty much preview every home before I show the client. Why? Because you don't want to waste your client's time. And then by preview it, you can explain to the client much better so they can make an informative decision, right? For example, if you preview it, you can pick up a lot of things, right? Say, for example, high tension wire, right? You can say, hey, this cross the street, you don't see it on the photo because it's on the cross the street, but it's still very close to your property. And is that bothers you? Right. We as an agent, we don't make a decision, but we inform our clients so they can make informative decision. Mm-hmm. As you said, good agent should know, what client need and what they need, and also go extra mile to preview the home to find out more for your client.
In this case, we're talking about location.
Yeah,
but the same
philosophy
principle.
Too.
For example, I had a client that needed a warehouse and they wanted multiple loading docks, but they needed to make sure that the spacing, the size of the loading area, had sufficient space so that they could conduct maybe four or five 53-foot trailers at the same time. So we had looked at one warehouse that was under construction, and from the plan it looked doable, and the data that presented by the owners was, there's plenty of room for these trucks to fit in. But after, not until we did the test run did we find out that it was a complete failure, that it was just too tight, because you could, in theory or on paper, you could fit the 53 trailers one next to each other, but you couldn't back them in, and then there was a lot of logistic parameters. So you learn by doing this that you have to, so anything that's an existing structure, you have to understand your client's needs, and then you have to go out there and preview it so you don't waste their time in looking and showing them something that you know is not a good fit.
Yes.
Sometimes you can't always be sure, and if there's any uncertainty, sure, bring it to their, show it to them. But if you know something is not going to work because either
in this case, right? I mean, even though on the paper it's enough space, the landlord insists enough space,
right.
But you're worried, so you alert the client, your client, and they did the trial. But next time when you have a similar, you will tell them you don't have to do the trial. I know it's not going to work because I did it 6 months ago or 2 years ago.
Correct.
So that's what comes to the experience.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then when you're researching the location and all the external factors, then when you find a space that could work, then you have to look at the internal factors of the space. You have to look at the layout. You have to consider the parking. How much parking is allocated for it. And probably should get a double asterisk would be the zoning, because you've got to make sure that you have to understand your client's proposed use. You have to check the zoning code, make sure that proposed use is allowable by the zoning code. And in addition to that, I would always check with the local zoning officer and just say, hey, my client is proposing to open a coffee shop here. Is there anything that's, zoned? Is it zoned for that particular use? And then it gets very tricky. You have to look, if you're looking at something, you know, that may be zoned for that use, you also have to look at what the prior use is, because there's different regulations that kick in under the zoning and mixed use. If you change from, let's say there was a mercantile place there that sold, let's say, curtains, and then the new client comes in and say, oh, I don't want to do sales, I want to use this for hosting birthday parties, that would be changing the use from mercantile to assembly. Then you have to know there might be different code requirements that pertain to that particular space. Mm-hmm. So it's quite important that you know that you're aware of those potential issues.
That's a very good point, Ken. Say, for example, if the place used to be a restaurant, sit-down restaurant, for example, right? And later on, whoever purchased, they become more takeout. And now you bought it, you want to go back to the restaurant. Maybe in the interim, the parking changed. So maybe you're not allowed to go back.
Well,
right?
We had that situation. Yeah. I mean, not exactly that, but we had a strip mall in Edison where they had two existing restaurants, and the third space technically was big enough to be a sit down restaurant. That gets into the parking. However, the parking ordinance said, because there's so many tables, there's so many spaces allocated for the Mexican restaurant and the pizzeria that are there, there's not enough parking in that small, it was a very small parking lot to begin mm-hmm. with. So, and the code prohibited a sit-down restaurant. Yep. So if you don't know that up front, then you can waste a lot of time entertaining prospective mm-hmm. applicants, because restaurant is a very hot commodity now. So a lot of the inquiries initially were for restaurant, but unfortunately we had to tell them, no, you could only have a takeout restaurant. Mm-hmm. So
because
of parking. So that's something that gets into the parking, the zoning. You know, you have to know the that's all, and what you can do to the space. If you want to put in a restaurant, you have to see, is the landlord willing to allow the restaurant?
Yes.
If there's certain types of events and certain types of tenant improvements you want to do. So just because it's zoned for that, the landlord may say, no, I don't want another restaurant.
Yes.
So you have to ask the right, you have to know and ask the right questions.
Yes, absolutely.
Yep. So that's that. So also hours of operation is something you have to understand, your client's business mm-hmm. hour of operation. If they want to, what are their intended start date, end date? When do they want to open and close? And is that permitted based on the local ordinances and with the landlord?
Yep.
That's all.
Always check with the township. I remember many years ago when I started, I did a few commercial transactions. I almost go to the township on a weekly basis.
Yep.
That's how I get to know the township so well.
Yeah, I think it's always, don't be shy. It's always good if you're not sure. There's so many complications and so many different things in the code. You can't be expected, a commercial agent and nor the tenant can be expected to be an expert in it, but just be knowledgeable on the potential landmines, so you don't get yourself stuck into something that doesn't work for the type of business you want. Another thing that has to be checked out clearly is, obviously, if you're going into a space, you want to be able to highlight it and market it. So we talk now about the signage.
Yes.
The signage is very important. So you want to know what your rights are as a tenant for signage. Can you put a sign up if the mall has a pylon? Is there space for you to put a sign there? Is the signage permitted on the windows display or the door entry?
Yep.
So you have to negotiate that. That all has to be negotiated up front. And as the commercial agent representing the tenant, you have to make sure that you address all these important items as part of the negotiation process so you protect your tenant's rights.
Yep. With the signage, right, I did one long, long time ago. Not only you have to get a landlord agreed, right, up front right. negotiation, also you have to get a township agreed. So you have to go to the township to get approval too. I remember that I have to accompany the people go to the town to put application form in for the signage. Yes, absolutely mm-hmm. very important. Once again, being an agent, have to be very detailed. The client hire us for a reason. They rely on us, our expertise. They are good either restaurant or any type of business. That's their expertise. But with the real estate, that's why they hire us. That's why we have to really helping them to find the right place.
Mm-hmm. And now we're going to cover the big ticket items you have to be aware of as part of the lease negotiation. The HVAC system, this is always a very gray area where sometimes the tenant says it's unfair for me to come in, take over the space and inherit it in an old HVAC system that might be 10 years or 15 years old. Because, God, if it breaks, you know, why? And I have to incur, I'm not going to be stuck incurring $10,000 to $15,000 in replacement costs. So these things have to be negotiated carefully. You have to, first of all, know the age of the HVAC system. know the condition, have it evaluated, and then you have to negotiate. What oftentimes happens in situations like this is that the tenant and landlord reach an agreement. A possible scenario might be where the tenant is responsible. The lease might be written so the tenant is responsible for the maintenance, changing the filter, and doing, you know, twice a yearly maintenance. Must have a maintenance contract, and then any repairs maybe under $250. And then the lease would also further state that anything over $250 or any replacement would be on the landlord. That could be one situation that could be a fair compromise.
Yeah, or maybe a replacement you can work out. The tenant will contribute a certain percentage of the new AC. That's all negotiable.
It's all negotiable. Yeah. That's the thing. But you have to be aware of it as part of your another potential big issue. Because if not, and you get the lease and you don't read that carefully. All right, so we're almost out of time, but basically the next step as an agent would be once you've found the place, you've negotiated the terms, you would then write up the terms in what's called a letter of intent, an LOI. A letter of intent is a non-binding, it's a proposal. You would outline the name of the tenant, the personal guarantor, because anything in commercial, unless you're a big corporation, it's always personally guaranteed. So you can have the lease in your business name, your LLC name, but you must have a personal guarantor, and the landlord will want to see your financials, your tax records, maybe the last 2 to 3 years and credit score. That's all pretty much a must. That's a non-negotiable. And then the LOI will contain the start date, the end date, the proposed use of the business, the rental rates, the proposed increases, and then anything on the tenant's wish list, which would be like they want a rent abatement or free rent for 1 month or 2 months. But with that, you have to justify why you want that rent, why the tenant needs that rent abatement. You can't just say, I want 2 months or 1 month for the hell of it. It's got to be a justifiable reason, because I have to go in there, I have to build the kitchen, I have to do this and that, and, you know, get the vents in and install the counters or paint it. And, you know, you have to, it has to be justifiable. And then, of course, the security deposit. And then from the letter of intent, when that's all agreed upon, then the actual lease is written by prepared by the landlord or the landlord's attorney. In New Jersey, agents cannot fill in the blanks and do a commercial lease. It must be done by the lawyer. That's something that's a must. But the letter of intent, the LOI, serves as the basis for forming the lease.
Yes, that's just start negotiation. Just
exactly
basic items. Yeah, and that can be done by the agent. Yes.
Yep. All right. I think we're out of time. So I hope everyone enjoyed the show. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
You have been listening to All About Real Estate with Ken and Jane Muller, airing every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 93.5 FM, 1450 AM, Fox Sports, New Jersey. For feedback and suggestions for future topics, go to their Facebook page, All About Real Estate with Ken and Jane, or email them at realestatewithkenandjane@gmail.com or call 732-898-2266.